Monday already. Yes. Yes, it is. Lots of NCAA action to unpack. Yeah. The sports machine was slim. I took a look this morning out of sheer morbid curiosity. I looked at the NCAA tournament picks that we had revealed during our special preview of the tournament back a couple of weeks before it all got started up. Me, my brother Dave, and Baker were on the show, and we talked about our picks and some upset potential and stuff like that. And as we all know here, fast forward to the end of the tournament, and you know, there aren't too many big upsets going on. I guess there's a few. NC State, most certainly. We're going to dive into them because I know if you love college basketball, you love this NC State team and the story they have of Bruin. And we're going to do a special here at some point during the week. I'm going to talk about maybe some of the similarities between this team and the 1983 NC State team that pulled off that miraculous win against it was Houston back in the day, right, with Hakeem Olajuwon. I haven't done any research on that team yet, but I know NC State winning was 1983 was a huge miracle, I guess. Is it possible that this many years later, is it 31? 41? 41. NC State, could they do it again? They're going to play Purdue. We'll see about that game. I give them more than a puncher's chance in that game. But the behemoth at the end of the road here, UConn. I mean, this is insanity, really, how good this UConn team is. Or, as my brother Dave texted me over the weekends, like, you know, how bad the other teams are. Maybe that's just it. I mean, maybe every other team stinks, and it's just that UConn is good and doesn't have weaknesses, or at least they don't have weaknesses that other teams have been able to exploit up until this point. Let's rock and roll into college basketball for a bunch of today's show, just because I love it. But the picks, my brother Dave, me, and Baker, as I look through, we each gave our final four picks. In the South, we had Marquette, Duke, and Kentucky. NC State comes out of the South. In the Midwest, we had Tennessee, Creighton, and South Carolina. Purdue, the number one seed, goes there. In the top, we had, in the West. UNC. And UNC. All three regions, not a one of us picked the team in the final four. And then you got the top here with UConn. And I told you right from the get-go, I predicted Auburn was going to upset UConn second round. I'm just picking against UConn every round. My brother Dave called me on it last week on the show here. I think I'm just going to find a narrative to pick against UConn in every single round, because my take from the beginning is they're not going to go back-to-back. Well, now I'm here today going, my God, I wish I had bet them to win it all at the very beginning because they look unstoppable. But I had Auburn to come out of that region, and Baker and Dave, thankfully, with common sense, had UConn, both of them. So let's start with the game from yesterday with NC State, because I'm going to tell you what, if you watched the game, NC State against Duke. I mean, I'm hitched to NC State because I just love every bit about the team, the chemistry, the camaraderie, and the big man in the middle, DJ Burns. He's just so big and just massive, but he's kind of fat out there, right? You watch him running around, it's like, dude, is this guy going to wear down? And he just doesn't seem to, but his touch around the basket, his moves, for a man of that size, I can't think of another player, really, who's been as polished and professional as he is. And then post-game interviews, you listen to the guy and you see him smiling during the games even. You see him cheering to the crowd. And I want to talk about the crowd at some point here too. I got to highlight that in my notebook because I'm telling you, the crowd is willing this team to victories. And the team knows it. That's why they're all like, come on, get up. DJ Burns is telling the fans, cheer. That's the infectious attitude that I've been like clamoring for here from Boston fans, whether it's for the Celtics or the Bruins, when you go to the Garden in the playoffs. It matters. If it didn't matter, why do you think the players would be on the bench for NC State standing up going, come on, let me hear it. Let me hear it, fans. And the fans are going buck wild, and it's obviously having an impact. The first half of that game, I'm sorry, Duke against NC State, it looked like Duke was going to run away. I thought for sure Duke was going to win the game by 20 points. I mean, I was rooting for NC State. They couldn't do anything offensively. DJ Burns was the only guy who was doing anything. Yeah, he started off the game great, but you can't go into a game thinking you're going to win, giving it to a man who's like 300 pounds, posting up all game long, and nobody else coming through and able to do anything. DJ Horn, I mean, I like the guy. I know he has talent, but he wasn't doing anything first half. The O'Connell guy, nothing. Nobody was able to do anything. Marcel made a shot or two early, and I do like that dude's game. But, I mean, if you went to halftime thinking NC State was going to come back, I would just be like, dude, I don't know what you're watching. You don't know anything about basketball. But I have told you over the last bunch of months, Duke is not tough. Filipowski is a fake tough guy. He's 7 feet tall. He's flexing. He's running around flexing all tournament now. That's his new thing, how big and strong. Where were you yesterday, dude? When NC State came out in the second half and just crushed you guys. You know where you were? For the last 5 minutes, you were on the bench. You know why? Because with four fouls, you wanted to like cheap shot somebody on a box out. Mentally weak. That's the theme of this tournament is what I'm going to tell everybody. Is this younger generation of athlete and really human being in the United States is just mentally fragile. And to offer up proof to back up that comment of just really how fragile mentally this younger generation of basketball player is, I offer to you a 30-0 run that UConn went on against Illinois. And I know UConn is better than Illinois. And maybe part of me is just sour grapes because, again, I was picking Illinois to beat UConn, because I just keep picking against UConn every single time, and I can see the Shannon guy from Illinois, man, he's got potential. He could be a legit player in the NBA because, I mean, he can play some defense, steal the ball, he got good instincts, and he can finish, and he can shoot. Like, this guy's a weapon. He's got the height. He's probably going to go and have a real nice NBA career. He's got some baggage definitely holding over his head that, you know, I don't really know anything about, so I'm not going to speak to it. But Illinois 30-0. I mean, listen, it's not that much of a talent like outclassing. You can't convince me that UConn is just so good. When they finally want to play, they're going to go on a 30-0 run against everybody. No, this is just Illinois tucked their tail between their legs, guts freaked out, stopped, you know, having confidence, and just lay down and let UConn just like trample all over them. What an embarrassment. A 30-0 run. I'm just telling you, dude, put me in the game. Well, you weren't going to do worse than 30-0. And when we called the timeout after it had been a 10-0 run, I would have said or done something in that huddle that would have made the team find some confidence one way or another. That's just a complete buckling mentally by Illinois. And it makes everybody continue to go, wow, UConn, they're unstoppable. They're going all the way. You can't possibly beat them. I'm going to continue to go the other side. Maybe Alabama's going to beat them. Alabama has shown some mental toughness at the very least. Now, maybe once pushed up against it, they're going to just crumble. But Alabama's going to style a basketball that they want to play, get up and down the court. The only problem is, if you don't get rebounds, and that Clingham guy is, I mean, he's big and does the right things. He knows how to play basketball for UConn, especially on the offensive end, like setting picks, when to roll to the basket, if he gets the ball, where to kick it to. Those players all know the offense on UConn. So if UConn's scoring, it's tough for Alabama to get down and push in advance, right? Get the ball ahead and shoot that three in transition if UConn's waiting for them. UConn's obviously a very good defensive team, but maybe Bama can just rain the threes. I'm hoping and praying because I just want to see UConn lose. I don't like Danny Hurley as a coach. I think he complains too much. As I complain to start the Monday show here on the Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. One thing I will not be complaining about today is the Boston Bruins. Let's talk about them when we come back here on NHTalkRadio.com. Gotta talk about the Bruins' win on Saturday. I'm sure plenty of you missed it, so I'm about to fill you in. To finish up the college basketball stuff real quick, I will say Purdue. They beat Tennessee 72-66, just a back-and-forth game. It was like the game was tied almost the entire way through. One team would get up by 6 points, and then the other team would come right back and make two threes, and it'd be tied. It just alternated the entire game. And Dalton Kincaid was on fire early for Tennessee. The guy I said 3 to 4 months ago was the best player in college basketball and that he'd be a great player in the NBA. I will say second half, and I've noticed it more and more over the last month of the season, he missed a lot of open shots. And I don't know if that was just tired, lack of clutch. I don't want to say it's being lack of clutch, you know, Gene. I think he came to play at the start of the game. So, I mean, that took some clutch and toughness. But in the second half against Purdue, Dalton Kincaid just too many shots that he could have finished and just didn't. So Purdue, I mean, their lifeline continues on after 3 years in a row of losing to double-digit seeds, losing to a 16 seed last year. They come out now. Purdue's in the Final Four, and it did seem to me that Zach Edey afterwards, it was a great moment. He was hugging his mom, if you saw, and she was like crying, like, "Oh, I'm so happy for you. You did it," you know, this. And then you could tell he was emotionally, like, you know, rewarded for making the Final Four. And you just wonder, is that enough for them? Like, we've talked about it a couple times over the last few months. Virginia, a few years, went out 1 year to the number 16 seed in the first round. It was the first time it had ever happened. And then the next year, they went all the way. And now Purdue last year went out to a number 16 seed, and now they're in the Final Four. But as I watch, I just think the teams that they're playing really, like, haven't been that good. The first round they played Grambling, a number 16 seed. Then they played Utah State from the Mountain West, and we all know the Mountain West was, like, you know, to be nice trash. Then they played Gonzaga. And Gonzaga, I mean, St. Mary's lost their first-round tournament game by over 20 points. St. Mary's played against Gonzaga in the finals of their conference. I watched the game. St. Mary's was decidedly better than Gonzaga in that game. They beat them handily. And that was in the conference championship game. So St. Mary's wins the conference tournament, comes out, loses first round by over 20. Gonzaga wins a couple games. Okay, great. Then, I mean, they get crushed by Purdue, as I said was going to happen on the air. And so that's because I knew Purdue's just better than Gonzaga. Gonzaga not very good. And now Purdue continues on and plays against Tennessee here over the weekend. And Tennessee, the SEC, I don't know. I know Alabama's there, so we can't trash the whole SEC, can we? No. But I can say that Tennessee only has one scoring option. Dalton Kincaid, the Ziegler guy, he's a competitor. I love his defense. Incredible. But he's just not a shooter, man. He's not going to get you any offense. Vescovi's not going to get any offense. I mean, heck, they won their Sweet 16 game to make the Elite Eight. Vescovi didn't even play. He looked great last year, but this year he hasn't done nothing. And he didn't do anything here over the weekend either. So Tennessee bows out. I just don't give Purdue a ton of credit for that win either, honestly. Like, okay, good game. That was your biggest challenge so far, and you won. So now you're in the Final Four. You're going up against NC State. Purdue against DJ Burns? Come on, baby. Zach Edey against DJ Burns? That's gonna be fun. I'm rooting for NC State. And part of me now, I mean, I'm definitely rooting for Alabama, but wouldn't it be cool to see NC State win? And they are a 9-point underdog, just so you know. Purdue favored by 9. UConn's favored by 11.5 over Alabama. Like, now it's catching on. Like, UConn has won every game in last year's tournament and this year's tournament so far. And they've won each game by over 10, covered every game. So now it's like, okay, UConn by 11.5. Alabama, what are you going to do? Alabama can shoot the three. And this Sears kid, as the pistol said on Friday, dude's good. Sears is definitely good. So I hope you can come out and get it done, man. All I'll say is UConn's going to be ready on transition. Hurley is going to just drill it into them. You need to get back. You need to get back. Maybe that throws them off a little bit on the offensive end with their shooting, right? With UConn, if you're thinking always on the offensive end about, well, after I shoot, I got to get back on D, maybe that causes you to miss a couple of shots that normally you would make. Here's hoping. Boston Bruins, if you didn't see it on Saturday, we played Washington Capitals. And I got my notebook in front of me because nobody remembers what's happening on Saturday during the day. I mean, the one play I wrote down in my notebook, Lindholm, what a save. And you say, Lindholm, he's not the goalie, right? No, he's not. You're right. Swayman was the goalie on Saturday. But Lindholm snuck in behind Swayman on one play where Washington's shot was going in. And Lindholm, like, dove and made an incredible save. Now, don't forget, people, Lindholm is the guy who was injured for like a month or more. He was one of the best defensemen in hockey last year for the Bruins. In the playoffs last year, he was hurting. You could tell. He wasn't the same guy. We come out this year, we're playing great. Well, he gets hurt again. This time he goes, you know, on the DL or whatever it is. He ain't playing for a month and change or more. And he's just come back over the last few weeks. And I'm like, dude, yeah, we were losing a lot of closer games before, but we didn't have one of our best defensemen. Now, Charlie McAvoy is unquestionably the best defenseman on the team, but Lindholm is real, real, real good, like Stanley Cup winning starting defenseman, good. And now he's starting to make some plays. Didn't he score a goal last week in a big game spot? I think he made a nice assist in a big spot recently too. And then he makes this nice save. I'm just telling you, it's reasons why I'm on the Bruins bandwagon so much. It's 2-2 at the end of regulation. We go into overtime. And 1 minute into overtime, as luck would have it, I was just talking about how great he is. Lindholm gets called for a penalty. It was a high stick where a guy kind of like forced his stick up and it came up and nailed a player on Washington in the face, cut him, so that you got the minor penalty for 2 minutes and then you get the extra 2 minutes. So you normally in hockey in the overtime period, you're playing 3-on-3, but when one team gets a penalty against it, the other team goes 4-on-3. So think about this. We've had all these tough losses during the year. Everybody thinking we crumble at the end of games, right? And I've been on here telling everybody, this team is tough. Like, stop feeding into these silly narratives just because we lose some games. There's reasons why these things happen. And Thomas Polk has been on here saying, well, in the playoffs, you don't go to 3-on-3. You know, like, and you don't go to shootouts. You're going to be playing 5-on-5 hockey. And the Bruins have been pretty great at that. Yes, we have, Thomas. You're absolutely right. And guess what, though? Now we're starting to get pretty darn good in the overtimes and the shootout stuff. Quietly, we're starting to win these games. The Bruins had a four-minute penalty disadvantage, four skaters to three, to kill off into the end of overtime. And they do it awesomely. Swayman made some big saves. Players, like, just all over the ice, diving, like, helter-skelter, but the Bruins pull it out, get into the shootout, where we haven't been great all regular season. Our shootouts have not been good at all, actually. But we got momentum. And not just in this game, we got momentum for the season. We're starting to win these closer games at the end. That's what champions do. Come right out, first goal of the, first shot of the shootout. You got Jake DeBrusk. He skates in fast. Boom. But we go up 1-0. I'm like, yes. Oshie from Washington, he misses. We're up 1-0. Coyle goes in. He goes in slow towards the goaltender. He misses, gets stopped. And I'm just like, why are you going in slow, dude? We talked about this at the meeting here earlier the year a bunch of times on the radio. You got to go in, skate fast. The Bruins do much better on the shootouts when you skate in fast. But no, we went slow. Strome comes in on the other side for Washington. It's now 1-1. And you're always on the edge of your seat with this team, this Bruins team. It's so great. Pastrnak comes up. He's going third for us. Scores. We go ahead. Now they only got one more shot. I don't even know who the dude was. Guess what? All we needed to do was get a stop. We don't get the stop. Swayman gets beat. So we're going into extra innings in hockey. It's continuing the shootout. I forget who went fourth for us. We miss. Fourth for them, miss. Fifth for us. We're up. Shattenkirk. And Shattenkirk's stats and shootouts are excellent. He's at like almost 37, 38%. And so I was like, oh, wow. He goes in. He scores. Fantastic. Swayman makes the save against the next guy. 3-2 win. Shootout. The Bruins are the team to get on board with, man. I'm telling you, people, the Bruins are going places this year, and you want to be going places with the team while it happens, because it's going to be awesome. The Boston Celtics, how far are they going? Let's talk about them when we come back here on WKXL Radio, The Sports Machine with Slim, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. You got it in the right place, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. Sports Machine with Slim continues on a Monday. During the break, I'm researching some stuff for the Celtics, and it just hits me. What about the Red Sox? No idea what the Red Sox did this weekend. None. No idea what the Red Sox did. I don't know if they won last night. I don't know if they won or not Saturday. And that's intentional. I'll tell you right now. Like, I am in a fantasy sports league, baseball league. I need to set my lineup. I do need to remember to do that here. But it's intentional with the Red Sox because, like, listen, if their organization is not going to put any money into the team, I'm sorry. I'm just not, like, I'm not going to pay attention to you. If around here, the Red Sox in New England were the thing. I mean, the Celtics were for a while. During my life, like in the 80s, we certainly were the big thing. But the Red Sox have always been. When we went to the World Series against the New York Mets back in 1986, like I can remember staying up. I was only 12 years old. But like the pain of seeing that ball go through Bill Buckner's legs and Calvin Schiraldi faltering and stuff like this. That was gut-wrenching, those times. But we stayed with the Red Sox all the way through. Like the Celtics, when we got bad around here, people kind of didn't care about basketball. Always cared about the Red Sox during those times. Now, something's happened over the last 10 years in this region where, like, we care about the Red Sox when they're good, but I'm not so sure we care about them at all anymore when they're bad. And for me, it's just reached a tipping point with the organization where you know the owner is not in it to win. John Henry and the leadership team at the Red Sox, they're not in it to win right now. They're in it to make money. And, you know, part of me thinks the Patriots ownership is the same way. But I'm sure they are. You know, the people that are rich, they're always in it for the money in one way, shape, or form. The Red Sox, though, I just can't get behind it. Rafael Devers, I'll root for you all year long, unless you go to the DL, because I saw he did not play. Was it Saturday night, Friday night? Rafael Devers didn't play, sore left shoulder. That's not a good thing. When your best player is coming out injured, second game of the year, hopefully that's not something that's going to drag on all year long. But in the end, I guess I don't care. right? But I would feel bad for Devers because I just do like that guy. And it's tough to be, let's say, somebody who signs that type of a contract. Of course, it's great. You get paid all that money, Rafael Devers. It's great for him. But you want to compete each year. You've been around an environment where you've had a chance to win and stuff. Be competitive here as part of the Red Sox. If you're Devers, when you're signing that long-term deal, you're believing the team is committing to you and to you as a centerpiece around which to build a winner. But at some point, as the years go by, you start to go, wait a second here. We're not building a winner. And Rafael Devers is in that spot this year. So hopefully he's able to just tough through that and have a great season. Let's root at the very least. I'll root for him individually. And the other players, because I have Duran on my fantasy team too, and I like that dude. So they got some players you want to cheer for. Tristan Casas, maybe I try to trade for him. Hopefully he gets off to a terrible start. But when he was hot last year, he was real hot. Kind of like the Boston Celtics. When they're hot, they're hot. And for two games last week at Atlanta, scary, but they were not hot. One interesting thing I've seen here in the last four games with the Celts, Tatum has led the team in scoring four games in a row. And I guess that's A-OK, right? But there was the stretch there where I felt like the Celts were playing their best basketball when Jaylen Brown was leading the team in scoring. Those two games in Atlanta that we lost, one we lost, what, 120 to 118? I think that was the one where we were up by 30. And they came back. Did that really happen? Did the Celtics really, were they up by 30? Is that how many they were up by? And they lost the game? 120, 118. Tatum at 37. Yeah, you lost. Couldn't come through when it mattered at the end. And then the overtime game was Thursday night. We didn't talk a ton about it Friday because we wanted to dive more into college basketball and stuff. But 123, 122. Jaylen Brown had hit the game leading shot. We thought it was winning shot with about 6-7 minutes left on a play that was not designed for him. It was designed initially for Porzingis. Porzingis didn't get anywhere. And as I re-listened to Friday's show during the weekend, and the Pistol goes, what was that play call? You're absolutely right, Pistol. The spotlight needs to be on Joe Mazzulla. I'm sorry. In these late game situation adjustments from the coach, just flat out not good. And again, this is simple for me. The Celtics have struggled at end of game situations in tight games. And maybe you could say this is nitpicking. I'm not complaining. I am just saying the facts. And the coach and his moves, I'm qualified to critique him on, because I'm at his level from a coaching standpoint. I'm just not getting paid that amount of money because life hasn't put me in that situation yet. But when Jaylen Brown nails that shot to go up by one against the Hawks on Thursday in overtime, okay, this is on the heels of you blowing a 30-point lead the game before. So keep in mind, like, in the fact that you haven't really come through at all in late-game situations at all this year. Okay, so, yeah, we're up in the Eastern Conference by 10 games. So each game, what does it matter? But listen, dude, at the end of a game, you'd like to be able to win a one-possession game, wouldn't you? Isn't that maybe in your mind just a little bit as a player? I got news for you. Yes. All the players on the court, it's in their mind. Jason Tatum has not been coming through in end-of-game situations. Really, nobody has. Finally, Jaylen Brown on Thursday gets that pass, rises up like a winner from the elbow, knocks down a deuce. Celts go in front by one in overtime against the team that had beaten us when they were down by 30 a couple nights before. Come out of the timeout. Come out of the huddle. DeJounte Murray has shot the ball 43 times. And Joe Mazzulla puts Jrue Holiday on him. And we know Jrue Holiday, I love the guy. He's a winner. He's a competitor. He's a heck of a defensive player. But the stamp has been put on Jaylen Brown this season. He said as much in interviews over the last couple weeks. I love guarding the best player on the other team. I always want to guard the best player. He's been saying these things about how, like, he's kind of looked at as the defensive stopper on the Celtics. That's the time in the game, and in the season, I would say, where as a coach, Jaylen Brown, you just made this shot. Dude, they're going to go to DeJounte Murray. He's shot 43 times this game. They're going to look to get the ball to him. Jaylen, I want you on him. You got a little more size than Drew Holiday, but more importantly, you want to talk like you're the best defensive player on the team? Go win it for us. You just did it on the offensive end. And if you as a coach said that in the huddle, listen, we're going to put Jaylen on DeJounte Murray in this last possession. There's 6 seconds left. Jaylen, you just made the shot to put us ahead. I love to see it. I love you step up, made it happen, end of game situation. Guess what? Now you're going to go do it again on the defensive side of the things. They're going to get him the ball. You're going to stop him. Everybody cool with that? Everybody in that huddle would have said, yes, coach. Yes, we're cool with that. Go do it, Jaylen. You break the huddle. Go get him, Jaylen. Go get him. And Atlanta draws the play up in their huddle. Get the ball to DeJounte Murray. Drew Holiday's guarding them. I'm just saying, dude, it's different chemistry inside that huddle. It's different mentality. If you put that focus on Jaylen Brown in that moment, he wants it on him. You don't think Jaylen Brown, when they broke that huddle, was saying, man, I wish I was guarding Murray. But he isn't all the way there yet. Like Jordan would have said, hey, I'm guarding Murray. Like that's what I would have said. That's what I would have said if we were playing basketball. Like, no. I'm guarding him, dude. This is my time. I'm getting him. And that just didn't happen. Maybe that's because Joe Mazzulla is the tough guy in the group. We've talked about that over the last couple of weeks. Like, who's our tough guy? I do think it's Xavier Tillman now, actually. But he's still initiating he's working his way into the team. And he doesn't play that much. So who's the tough guy out of the five dudes on the court? We've kind of said maybe Drew Holiday because he's won before and we all know he's a winner. He doesn't seem to be that loud, but like the way that guy competes, I love that dude. But it was time for Jaylen Brown to get that opportunity. And in his mind, when they broke the huddle, he was saying he wishes he had. Well, I'm just going to tell you, people, that's why the shot went in. Like the mentality, the thinking of everyone. Don't we understand how important it is, how we all think? When we're all thinking negative, guess what happens? Bad things. When we're thinking positive, that's when good stuff happens. North Carolina State, their players, their fans, they're thinking positive, they're expecting positive, they're performing miracles. Can NC State do it again against Purdue? Yes, they can. We got one more segment here on the Sports Machine with Slim on a Monday. This is WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in the capital of New Hampshire. That's Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Love you, Manchester, New Hampshire. NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. We're coming right back in a minute. Got a bunch of things we're going to round out the show with today on Monday as we get everybody informed on things you might have missed during the weekend. I will say tonight, very cool women's basketball, the games tonight. And yesterday, just a side note, we're talking about the NC State men's team, the NC State women's team, who's the team that knocked out Tennessee. Going into the tournament, remember we had talked about Tennessee 500-1. Just was like, oh, interesting. You know, they played South Carolina close a couple times. Why not root for them? Watch them. Well, NC State took Tennessee out. They've now won a couple games since then. They're going on to play South Carolina on, I think it's Friday night. South Carolina, for people that don't know, undefeated. They're like, they're the big team. It's the Final Four. Starting up next weekend, but before we get there, tonight, to find out who the other two teams are they going to be in the Final Four for the women's side of things, you have Iowa and Caitlin Clark, who's been the topic of discussion on these airwaves a bunch of times over the last few months. Caitlin Clark is playing LSU, and the coach of LSU, for people that don't know, she's had some stuff going on with her here where I think it was the New York Post wrote an article, very unflattering, talking, you're criticizing her, some of her personal stuff, and she's not standing for it. Like, she's outspoken against the media and some of the things that are being said about her, her team, and she's kind of making herself the focus of the press. And I think it's an ingenious thing for her to do, actually, just because it takes the pressure off the players just a little bit. It makes them want to fight a little bit more for the coach. And LSU is your defending champ, for people that don't remember. Remember Angel Reese last year walking off the court? She was a player for LSU, and she was doing the hand in the face, like, you can't see me type of a thing to Caitlin Clark after they had won, when Caitlin Clark just had played her tail off, but just wasn't enough. They ended up losing by, like, 15-20 in that game last year, Iowa did. Well, tonight, surprisingly, Iowa's -2. I say surprisingly because, I mean, I know the press and everybody's going to pump up Caitlin Clark and everybody wants her to win. But last year, when I watched LSU play against Iowa, like, I'm sorry, dude, it wasn't a fair fight. Like, it doesn't matter how good Caitlin Clark, she was great in that game. They lost by 20. Like, the rest of her team is just not athletic enough, or was not athletic enough at all, to compete against LSU. And now you're going into this game tonight with Iowa as a 2-point favorite. And I just don't understand that. Like, I haven't watched a ton this year. I've watched enough to know that the players on her team just are not athletic this year. So I would expect an LSU win by 10 tonight. But they're getting 2 points. In the other game, UConn, who used to just roll through everybody all the time in women's college basketball, wasn't there a point where they won like 90-something games in a row over the course of 3 seasons or 4 seasons? Like, they just never used to lose. Well, the last couple of years, they've stubbed their toe. They've got a player by the name of, I think, Brookers is the last name. And she got injured, I guess, last year in the tournament. That's why they lost, I think, in the second round. But now their favorite tonight, -3.5 against USC. So that should be pretty cool, right? To see if UConn can just get back there. And not for nothing, like I said earlier here, the NC State men have made the Final Four. And the NC State women have made the Final Four. They're playing against South Carolina, I told you, this coming weekend. Well, you got the UConn men destroying, and they're in the Final Four. It'd be kind of cool to see the UConn women in the Final Four, too. Two East Coast basketball programs at the very height. UConn and NC State. That's interesting for me to watch. I'll root for UConn. I'll probably watch both of these games, actually, and report back to you on them tomorrow. As I do with other sports here, I will say on Saturday, the team we got to look out for in the East here is definitely New York Rangers. There's just no question about it. I mean, they came back, I told you, last weekend, a week ago here, they beat Florida in overtime, coming from behind on their home ice. And then the Rangers on Saturday this weekend, they beat the Coyotes 8-5. I'm sorry, you score 8 goals in a game, like, your team's playing good. You're feeling good. It doesn't matter about giving up the 5 because, like, whatever, at some point. So the Rangers are hot, and they've opened up a 3-point lead for home ice in the East. But in the end, it doesn't really matter that much to me who's going to get the last home ice, like in the conference finals. It's more about the path that you're going to take to get there. And then what's going to happen along the way? Injuries? Are you just meant to be? Like, in hockey, you got to have the toughness, number one, obviously. I'm not the biggest hockey guy, but you need to have the toughness. This is fairly evident. The one year the Bruins won it all, when I was watching a ton, was when we had Lucic, and we had Seidenberg and Chara, and it was just, we were tough and big and could play some hockey. The Bruins, we're tough. I know we're not winning fights, but Bruins are tough. So let's see who we'd match up with first round, second round, and if we meet the Rangers in the finals and they got the home ice, whatever. Let's go. Let's get it on at that point. Just a matter of saying, keep your eye on the Rangers. They're good. The Bruins this week, we got interesting slate of games. We only have 7 more games in the regular season. Like, this is time, people. This is the time we've been waiting for all year. There's like 2 more weeks left of regular season hockey and basketball. The Celtics, in fact, their season ends a week from Sunday. So there's 2 weeks more in the Celtics season. They play tonight at Charlotte. 5 o'clock, I think, is the start on that. 5 o'clock, the Celtics at Charlotte. Then Wednesday, we're playing at home Oklahoma City. Then we got Sacramento on Friday, and then Sunday, Portland. So we got four games this week between now and next Sunday. Three of them are at home. There's eight games left in the season. Next week on Tuesday, we play at the Bucks. Then we play Thursday, Friday, and Sunday at home against the Knicks, Charlotte, and Washington. So Celts have eight more games. Six of them are at home. Starting tonight with one on the road. Then we'll have six out of seven at home. That's a comforting way to end the season. You like that. You're going to go into the postseason fresh if you're the Celtics. And I'll tell you something. Thomas mentioned it Friday, too, with the Bruins. Our last game is 2 weeks from tomorrow. So what is that? 15 days. We got seven more games to play. Tuesday, which is tomorrow, we got at Nashville. Thursday, we play at Carolina. That's a big one. Thursday, we're at Carolina. Saturday, at home against Florida. And then next Tuesday, at home against Carolina. Carolina and Florida, the two teams we're against here at the top of the point standings, besides the New York Rangers, who are starting to pull away. So if New York's going to be number one, who's going to be two, three, and four? That's going to be between the Bruins, Carolina, and Florida. So we're playing the teams that we want to beat if we want home ice. So it's going to be exciting hockey here. Thursday at Carolina, no doubt. Hopefully the Bruins can get a win tomorrow at Nashville, run the road there, then at Carolina. Like I said, then we come home for two games. Saturday, we got Florida. Next Tuesday, Carolina. Then we have a break, though. We play Tuesday, Carolina. Then we're off until the Saturday. So we'll have 4 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 3 days off. Then we got three games in 4 nights, though. Saturday at Pittsburgh, Monday at Washington, and then the Tuesday at home against Ottawa. What I will say is I think you get some minor league guys come up for those last three. These next four games for the Bruins, they're the big ones. We got to separate ourselves from Carolina and Florida, create some space, okay, so that then you can – it's all right if you lose some games the last couple. Well, you got 3 and 4 days. You'd rather not have to be like on an all-out, let's get as many points as we can battling all the way through the end of the season at Pittsburgh, at Washington, at home against Ottawa. Rather be able to try and rest some guys. So this will be a good week for the Bruins. I'm excited to watch some college basketball tonight. The females get out there. Caitlin Clark, I am pulling for you. You know why? Because I'm not betting the game. If I was betting the game, I'd be betting LSU. And probably rather large, actually. But I'm not gambling right now. And I feel that's a very good thing to just give that up for a little bit. The crowd. I have this in big highlighted letters. The Celtics fans, the Bruins fans, when you go to these games, I'm telling you, I got a strategy, and I'm going to unveil it as the time gets closer here to playoffs. You got to go to these games. You got to make friends with the people around you before the tip of the game, before the drop of the puck. You got to be like, hey, everybody, how we doing? How we feeling? Can this team win it all? I think they need our help. I think we need to be ready to cheer. And we can start it in this section, and it will go throughout the stadium, just like the NC State players do when you watch their games. The fans are so into it. In all the college basketball games, the fans have an impact. You have an impact at professional games too. It's the same exact thing. We need the hunger. That's why I said with the Celtics last week, I don't think the Celtics are going to win anymore. I hope the Celtics are going to win, and that's a different fuel. That's a different level of hunger. As we finish up the show, I will say over the weekend, Draymond Green kicked Grant Williams in the you-know-what. Lightly, but still, Draymond Green, what a problem. We talked about him months ago. He probably should be suspended, right, permanently. Mavericks have won 7 in a row. They beat Houston last night, 125-107. Houston won like 10 games in a row, but Luka, 47 points. I'm not afraid of Dallas, and neither should you be. The Sports Machine with Slim. That's it for a Monday on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. You know how to do it. We'll meet you back here tomorrow, nhtalkradio.com.